We're going to connect with William Grimes, Associate Dean for Academic Affairs, Frederick S. Pardee School of Global Studies, Professor of International Relations and Political Science at Boston University. Good morning, Professor. Welcome to our program.
Hello.
So, it seems that the U.S. and Japan have really become tight allies since the end of World War II. So can you give it a bit of history between the two sides and what that relationship means maybe now?
Sure. Well, it's changed a lot over time. At the time of the San Francisco Treaty of 1952, when Japan got its independence back after the U.S. occupation, there was also the U.S.-Japan Mutual Security Treaty that was put into place, and that was the formation of the alliance. And it allowed for U.S. bases, much like there still are in Korea, but there were many, many more of them in Japan at the time.
Mm-hmm.
In 1960, there was a revision of the Mutual Security Treaty, and it was extremely volatile. There were a million people who actually had a single demonstration in the Capitol. So there were some serious concerns about the relationship between Japan and the United States within Japan. In 1970 as well, there was major demonstrations against the U.S.-Japan Security Treaty. So I think in a lot of ways that might sound a little familiar to Korean people who've also had sometimes an ambivalent relationship.
Yes.
And then over the course of the 1970s and 80s, a lot of Japanese public and policymakers really didn't think that Japan was under threat at all.
Mm.
And there was a sense that the U.S. alliance was kind of something that they needed to have, but they didn't really like it very much, and there wasn't a level of closeness. But over the last 25 years, I think that the U.S.-Japan alliance has become much, much closer militarily.
Yes.
Much, much more capable militarily, and also much closer politically and culturally as well.
Mm. Well, you know, sometimes when we look at the current state of affairs between the U.S. and Japan now, some people might have forgotten that there was actually very much a troubled history between the two sides, especially in terms of the Japanese internment camps back in the day. Can you actually let our listeners know about that just a little bit?
Sure. Well, there's, as you know, a long history of racism towards Asian people in the United States, and
yes.
Going back to the early days of immigration in the late 1800s. And rather famously, there was the Asian Exclusion Act, which is, I think, 1921 or so, which prevented people from East Asia from emigrating to the United States. And it was particularly aimed at Japan. And there's a lot of people who feel that this is one of the real irritants in the U.S.-Japan relations that might have contributed to the as one of many factors contributed to the hostilities between Japan and the United States in World War II.
Mm.
And in 1942, there was an order that was signed. There was a real concern that Japanese Americans, particularly in California and Hawaii, might be spies for Imperial Japan.
Yes.
And so there was a decree that was made signed by Franklin Roosevelt, who in other ways was one of our great presidents, but this is not a shining moment, that decreed that people would be put into essentially prisoner of war camps, internal internment camps. And they were in places like Arizona and Montana, places that were far away from the action, and places where the areas that would be either not very populated or that didn't have particularly good land.
Yes.
They wouldn't be near cities.
Mm. And so
it was a very shameful history.
Right. Oh, yes, indeed. And so the reason why I wanted to mention that is because I know that, studying American history and world history, even though I've heard of these internment camps, a lot of people actually don't know about them here in Korea. So I did want to mention that briefly. There is that, kind of very bad history and past between the two sides. But if we fast forward to today, I mean, it seems that At least on the surface, the two sides, seem to be kind of warming up in terms of this relationship, especially because both the U.S. and Japan are very weary of what China's doing in the East Asian region right now.
I think that's right. So, as I said, the U.S.-Japan alliance was first created to counter the Soviet bloc. So,
yes.
Soviet Union, and early on there was an expectation that China was part of this, but Japan was always quite ambivalent about the exclusion from China, but quite suspicious of the Soviet Union, even if it didn't always feel threatened. But what we've seen is with the end of the Cold War, most Japanese, I think, felt quite secure. And there was a sense that China was entering the world markets and the global society. And there was this period in the 1990s when most Japanese diplomats or policymakers that I would speak to would say, well, we think that we're creating a liberal order, and China is entering that liberal order. We won't be enemies. The Soviet Union is weakened, and plus they're moving towards greater democracy. But going to the sort of late 1990s, there was increasing concern about the growth of China, and of course it was also connected somewhat to North Korea.
Yes.
So the Japanese concerns over North Korea, the potential threat that North Korea might pose to Japan, were a reason for reinvigorating the alliance. And so you see certain types of activities mm-hmm. that are directly related to North Korea, like the setting up of ballistic missile defense, for example, which
yes.
was a decision that was made in the early 2000s. There's a much more much greater attention to coastal defenses. You may remember, I think it was 1999, that the Japanese Coast Guard sunk a North Korean vessel that was purportedly for fishing but had all sorts of spy materials on it.
Yes.
So I think that both of those things have brought the Japanese concerns about security again. But really, the rise of China, and even more so the belligerence of China, the assertiveness of China mm-hmm. In the oceans and in terms of anti-Japanese rhetoric in the last 10 to 15 years has really gotten, for the first time, Japanese public on the side of the U.S.-Japan alliance in a way that they never really had been before. There was some ambivalence. Mm-hmm. Policymakers generally were well on the side of it, but there really is a sense now that Japan needs defending in a way that you never had in the Cold War, strangely enough.
Right. So what about, you mentioned how the Japanese public has kind of swayed, they've been swayed, and they're kind of siding with, or they're more supportive of this alliance. But what about in terms of the American public? What's the general consensus, for example, on this, closer alliance, or even on Obama's visit to Hiroshima?
The visit to Hiroshima, I'll separate out a little bit.
Sure.
But I think that one of the things that's been very striking over the period that I've been involved in Japan, and I moved there as a kid in the late 1970s.
Okay.
So in the 1980s was a period of really strong frictions, particularly on the American side, deep resentment of Japanese economic success or
yes.
what was seen as unfair trading.
Mm-hmm.
Still some quite a bit of suspicion of people, leftover feelings from the Second World War,
right.
And ideas about Japan as being untrustworthy. But that's disappeared, extraordinarily disappeared. When you look at polling data on what country is the most trusted country in the United States and what country is our best ally, Japan is right up there. It's, behind the UK and not behind pretty much anywhere else. The support for our protection of Japan, which is really what the Mutual Security Treaty is I think more higher than it ever was, and opposition is much lower than it ever was. And Trump, of course, is a bit of an outlier, but Donald Trump he's unpredictable.
Yes.
So the Hiroshima thing, I think, really does start opening up other questions. And
yes.
I think in two ways. One is that there is a strong sense in the United States that we don't need to apologize for
right.
whatever was done in World War II, and that the atomic bombs were necessary or may have been necessary, and you know, and frankly, that anybody in that situation would have used them, whatever the horrible import of them. So I think that's a strong current inside of the United States.
Okay.
The other piece is, apology is quite unusual in world politics. Like large-scale apologies for big actions. You get little apologies, like, you know, we're sorry we accidentally bombed your embassy. You know, we apologize for an accident that involved one of your diplomats.
But yes.
Large-scale apologies are extraordinarily rare. People look to the German example, but Germany is very unique. Japan, frankly, has apologized more than almost any other place for a recent large-scale wrong. And Americans also don't really like the idea of apology, of apologizing, because there's always been the sense that the U.S. was on a mission to save the world in World War II. And
yes.
So, you know, you can excuse a lot of things if you assume that you were on, you know, in the right. And then that also dovetails with this conservative belief that President Obama is always apologizing for the United States and doesn't appreciate the essential goodness of the United States. And so that's something that, when he first became president, he gave talks in a number of places in the world, in Egypt and in Indonesia, people talked about it as his apology tour, which is, I think, inaccurate. But this is sort of everybody, you know, the conservative end has been saying this is apology tour part two. And so you can see that he's making up. He's very clearly not apologizing, but the message is supposed to be forward looking. It says,
yes.
This is a sad thing. It's a horrible thing. But let's talk about the future.
So you did mention like apologies on a smaller scale. So I was watching a news clip of him on CNN where he was apologizing about this alleged, murder, which was, conducted by a U.S. citizen or service person in Japan. So I did see, I understand what you're saying of apologies on a smaller scale, but not necessarily an apology for Hiroshima or Nagasaki. Well, what do you see in the future for U.S. and Japan relations? Do you think it's going to get even cozier? What's your take on this?
I do. I think I think there's a lot of things that draw the U.S. and Japan together. And right now, the particularly the concern about China, about rising China and its assertiveness in the area as well
yes.
as in North Korea, makes Japan really all the more important as a security ally. At the same time, Japanese economy is weakening, which has sort of dual effects. On the one hand, it makes Japan not perhaps as important a partner, you might think.
Yes.
But on the other hand, it also, the Japan sort of deceleration of economy and also the fact that it's not developing as rapidly means that there's a lot less friction.
I see.
You see, you know, that the greatest friction is when you have sort of incumbent U.S. firms who are suddenly challenged by, you know, foreigners.
Yes.
Same thing with Korea, by the way, and you I'm sure are very familiar with this. So American auto manufacturers were first very concerned about Japanese automakers, and then
right.
they became very concerned about Korean automakers. So it's that period of transition. But Japan's a mature economy, and so there are very, very few actual trade disputes. And if you look at the U.S. Trade court, so looking at anti-dumping and countervailing duty cases that were brought forward, there's one in have since 2000?
Yes.
Maybe two. There's very, very few. In China, there's you know, 80 or 90 or something like that.
Right.
So the there's actually the economy is, even if Japan might be seen as a less essential partner than, you know, somehow dealing with China for a lot of people, it's the frictions have largely disappeared. So and then the third thing I would say, which is I think a little bit hard to measure, but in the 70s and 80s and even in the 90s, people would talk about, oh, we have common security interests, we have common economic interests, we have common aspirations. And a lot of people didn't believe it, right? There was much more of a cultural chasm. But now I think Japanese values and American values have converged much more closely in ways that that tend to solidify this alliance. Abe used to talk about the arc of prosperity and democracy. And there was, been a lot of question about, does Japan really have a democratic culture or society? And I think it really does now. And I think maybe the similar questions could be said about Korea. And Korea has changed enormously over, over this period, too.
Yes, indeed. Oh, well, we have run out of time, but thank you so much for sharing, shedding light onto this visit, Obama's visit to Japan, and also, of course, the significance of U.S.-Japan relations. Thank you, Professor.
My pleasure.
And once again, that was our expert for today, William Grimes, a professor of IR and political science from Boston University.